Good morning and welcome to All Sides Weekend Books. This is The Book Show. I'm Christopher Purdy. Thank you for joining us. If you want to know all about what's best to read, you have come to the right place. Cassie Rose is here. She is WOSU's book critic. Her blog, thelongestchapter.com, is essential to anyone who loves books. Chris Hickey is here from the Columbus Metropolitan Library. She is the Youth Services Manager at the Whetstone Branch. Chris Hickey comes every month and brings us quick picks. Those are the books everybody wants to read. And Nick White, the OSU Faculty of English and Creative Writing and author, a raconteur, is here as well. And his choices are always provocative, fun, and worth reading. So, go! Thank you all, and belated Happy New Year to everybody.
Happy New Year.
Let's start with Chris Hickey from the library. And first of all, explain quick picks, and then give us one.
So our quick picks are the hot books that lots of people want to read. There's long hold lists. And if you come into our building, you might see that title on the quick pick display. You can check that out and jump the line. So why don't I start with the hottest quick pick that's out there? This is a book called The Let Them Theory by Mel Robbins. So when I checked the hold list last, the print hold list was over 900. The Libby digital hold list was over 1,500. So this book is having a viral moment. So Mel Robbins, she's like a motivational speaker. She also shares that she has crippling anxiety. So she kind of came up with this theory to help herself and thinks that it will help other people. And so the idea is, let's say your friends have gone and done something fun without you. So she says, let them. If you're at the grocery store, there's a long line and you're having angry thoughts about the incompetence of how the store is managed, let the store be incompetent. She's saying that you can choose your reaction, and that is where you have your power. And she's saying that this is a tool in the mental health toolbox. And easier said than done, right? Because humans are messy and we're emotional, and this doesn't come naturally.
Mel Robbins became pretty popular, I think, on TikTok as well, because the Let Them Theory became viral when she sort of explained it in a nutshell, because I remember it going around for a long time.
So now she has written this book. It came out in December, and she has examples of how to do this, which it's complicated, but she says it really comes down to your own self-awareness and understanding that it's impossible to control other people. And when you shift that mindset, she says you can kind of regain your own agency and power and just let them. Like if something ridiculous is happening, well, let them. Let them be incompetent. Let them do things without you. Let that person not love you. Just go. It's all right.
But what do you do with yourself when you're going, let them do this, let them do that, and you're still by yourself and not going into a party and whatever? What does she address that at all?
I think she does. She does talk about that, but she does come back to, letting some of those things go. Like if you're going to stew about that, which is upsetting. Being left out is awful. Having someone not love you is awful. But making those choices to not let it take over is kind of where she's getting at. So she has examples, and the book is pretty much like how you would go about that.
It's called The Let Them Book?
The Let Them Theory.
Theory, okay.
The life-changing tool that millions of people can't stop talking about. And based on the hold list, yes, that's true. And it's by Mel Robbins.
Now, you said about 900 holds from the library?
In print and over 1,500 in digital.
Is that a record? Do you even
know?
Okay, no. Really?
Think about Spare was way up there.
Prince Harry, right, yeah.
So, like, the very popular books.
I can imagine the Da Vinci Code back in the day.
Sure. The really hot book. And this book is having that moment.
Well, that's a quick pick from the Columbus Library. Good luck, because you get them. But try to go in. You change the displays on Tuesday.
So on Tuesdays, that's a release day for publishers. So that's when we get our new boxes, new books that come in the new box. We check them in and put them out.
And it's the same display in every branch.
Yes,
right?
Every branch has the quick picks. Some might have more than others, right. But you will have the same experience when you walk into any of our locations.
Chris Hickey is Youth Services Manager at the Whetstone Branch of the Columbus Library and brings us quick picks every month. And Cassie Rose brings us incredible reads every month. WOSU's book critic, what do you have for us?
I have a book called Driftless by David Rhodes, R-H-O-D-E-S. And I have to say, this is one of the best books that I have read in a long time. And for me, it was impossible to put down. And that's not the same as being unputdownable, because unputdownable is you've got to find out what happens next. That's not what this book is. I didn't want to put it down. It was impossible to put it down because I didn't want to put it down. And it takes place in a southwestern Wisconsin, in a place called, they called Driftless because of the glaciers over, you know, missed the area, so they didn't leave behind the rocks and the gravel and the sand. And it's a wooded place, and there is an area where there are buildings and homes. This is fiction, called Words. And so it opens up with a man named July Montgomery. And early in the morning, he's a farmer, and all of his cows are coming back in the dew set, and there's a little foggy, but something is going on. He can sense around the perimeter, and he says, oh, it's the panther that all the farmers have been talking about. And then you get the next chapter. In the chapter, some of them are 2 pages, some 6, maybe some 10. And in the next one, there's Graham Shotwell, another farmer, and he's in his tool shed, and he's building a pipe bomb. It doesn't say why or that he's angry or anything. Then you go on to the next chapter, and we meet Violet Brasso, who's returned to Words to help with her sister, who is in a wheelchair, much younger than her. The book is mostly about all these characters that become intertwined. But there are things that happen that feel genuine, but are also so surprising, like Olivia, Violet's sister, who goes rogue probably midway through the book and just empties out their savings account, finds a way to get a taxi. I mean, she needs to be taken care of full time, and gets to a casino. And then following that is one of the greatest car chases ever. And I'm just going to leave it at that. So part of the book is fun, but also it's very heartfelt, where there is Rusty Smith, whose house, he's a farmer, his house is just in needs repair, and the in-laws are coming. So he hires the Amish to come. And they say they understand the deadline, which is 3 weeks, but then they don't show up for 2 days because of a community event. And you're reading this, and the thing is, it doesn't all happen in one chapter. So then you find out Rusty has hired them. And then the next time he writes about Rusty, they haven't showed up. And then there's another time where they're in Iowa and you're thinking, okay, this isn't going to work. But it's interspersed between all sorts of other characters. Well, it's the day before and Rusty is coming home from the lumber store. And he comes up to his yard and it's filled with buggies and wagons. All the Amish have come out the day before. Because he's hired the Amish to take care of his house. And all of them have come in to take care of it. So the thing is about this book, it's just, I'll just say that in the acknowledgments that are at the beginning of the book, which usually you read at the end of the book, and the author says, it took me more than 10 years to write this book. And he says, it's not like I wasn't trying. He said, these characters wanted to be written, but they're not the kind of characters that find their way into print. They're private. And that's really nails it. There is also, and I'll just leave it at that, there is a situation, too, where Graham Shotwell's wife works at the co-op, the milk co-op, and she finds that there's fraud going on, money being stolen from the farmers, and she takes it into her own hands and is photocopying the evidence. And that story thread goes throughout the book. The characters, they feel genuine. The situations are genuine. They're also, again, surprising. You think this is what's going to happen, but it's not what happens. It's just one of the best books I've ever found.
Cassie Rose, is this a debut book? Is this a
debut novel? It's not. And it's not new. David Rhodes in the 1970s wrote 3 novels that did very well. And then he was in a motorcycle accident that paralyzed him from the chest down.
No kidding.
So 30 years later, which was in 2008, this book came out. And it's phenomenally good. It's been sitting on my reading table for a while, and I just could kick myself for letting it sit there. But I'll tell you, it was one of the most perfect books to read this January.
Driftless.
Driftless by
David Rhodes.
David Rhodes.
Cassie Rose recommends that. That means you need to read it. Write that down. Driftless by David Rhodes. And speaking of you need to read it, what do you got for us, my fans?
So every January, like clockwork, I have friends who are not writers who will reach out to me and they're like, I want to write something. I want to start a writing life. Where do I begin? And so I have these books that I keep on my shelf that I've taught from, these craft books that I often recommend. And so I brought some of them here today because I figured some of our listeners might, it's the new year, might be wanting to start writing that novel they've always been thinking about, or maybe want to just include writing in some way in their life.
My daughter's like that.
And I just got an ARC copy, not just a month ago, of Maggie Smith's new book, Dear Writer.
Now, we're not talking about the recently deceased actress.
No, we're talking about Ohio's Dame.
Our Maggie Smith.
Maggie Smith. Dear Writer, Pep Talks and Practical Advice for the Creative Life. And I kind of designate craft books into two different categories, and sometimes they can have a foot in each, and that's practical advice and sort of soul advice. And she does a really good job in this book of talking about both, talking about if you want practical advice about writing poetry, she gives it, but if you also want advice about how to center yourself, center your mind, center your soul, center your outlook before and during and after the writing process, this is also the book for you. And I loved what she said right here. And she begins each chapter to the writer. It's like, dear writer. And I love what she says here about vision. And I think this is something to like keep in mind at the beginning of the year. If you're thinking about writing, or if you're like me working on a writing project and trying to pick away at it a little at a time. And I love this paragraph. It's not that long, but I just wanted to share it with everyone. Vision is related to voice, to perspective, to selfhood, to authenticity. Being true to your own vision as a writer or an artist means doing your work, the work that only you can do, your memories, your point of view, your observations and metaphors. Everything about you that you bring to bear when you write is a combination that no one else has. And in the world of like AI and this idea of everyone wanting to write a kind of milquetoast kind of book or the next great bestseller, this really like spoke to me, and really this book, reading it over the break, has been a real grounding force with my own writing, and I just really appreciate her for writing it. And it doesn't come out until April 1st, but I have a feeling it's going to be a quick pick, and people are going to want to read this book, and I highly recommend it.
Maggie's been a guest on this show, and Maggie also, with her poem, You Can Make This Place Beautiful, made her world famous. And then the memoir she wrote with that title, which I believe was about her divorce. I mean, it was about a lot of searing and difficult things that she put out there in a way that was hard not to read. So I'm delighted to know about this. If Maggie Smith is giving advice to writers, then writers should read what she has to say, and so should everybody else. This is All Sides Weekend Books. This is The Book Show. I'm Christopher Purdy. We are going to take a quick break and come on back. Pencils poised, because you want to write down what our guests are saying. Don't go away.
We could all use a little help navigating the news these days. The Consider This podcast wants to give you a hand. 6 days a week, we'll help you make sense of the day's biggest news story and what it means for you in less than 15 minutes. Listen now to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
We are back. This is All Sides Weekend Books with Nick White, with Chris Hickey, and with Cassie Rose. I'm Christopher Purdy, and Nick White was talking to us about Dear Writer, Pep Talks and Practical Advice for the Creative Life by Maggie Smith, a book that is going to be published, available in April, and you got an early copy, but you were also talking about slow reading.
Right. Cassie and I were talking about that and how, Cassie, you said you're a slow reader as well, and I made the comment that I think to be a writer, you have to be a slow reader, and how I teach my students the art of slow reading. During my workshop, we spent 2 hours looking at one paragraph, the opening paragraph to a short story, and what all it was doing, both in terms of sentence structure, punctuation, the types of sentences that were in there, and really the word choice, really picking it apart. What does it foreground? What is it doing to set the mood in the story? And I talk about this a lot because I think we live in such a, and I know this is like me being an old man yelling at clouds, but we live it like in such a, I feel, fast-paced world that we can think that speed reading is rushing through a book is the way to go. But I really like to linger with a book. I like to reread paragraphs and try to recapture the way they made me feel, and study them and look at the technique and see what I can learn as a writer from them. And I got this idea from, I didn't bring the book today, but Francine Prose, she has this great book called Reading Like a Writer. And it's a beautiful book about close reading. And it's something that I try to always teach in my workshops, because for me, some of my greatest teachers have been the books that I've read and the books that I've lived with. And you don't even have to read the whole book by her. I recommend you do. But the first chapter is on close reading and like what she means by that and the pleasures that can come from slowing down and taking a work word by word.
Well, I think also for the slow reading, at least for me, it's not about always what happens.
Yes.
Like the what's coming next. It's being immersed in the character, the personality, and giving that character time to be with me. You know, because the more we read, the more we learn about people, because you have to get a character's personality and behavior right in order for it to work within the plot, and which then it teaches you about human behavior. But it's that immersion within the personality of the character. It's also in the immersion of the environment, mm-hmm. too, the way that it feels to be outside, where, like in this book, Driftless, it's, you know, in this place where it's pretty much just woods and land, but the farmers love to do the farming, understanding that, feeling what it's like to have a panther just going back and forth around the fence. What is it like when there are only, and also he's spot on with the Amish. These three men that Rusty hires to begin with, and they're like, yep, we'll get it done. Yep. And then they don't show up. But then at the end, there's this whole community all over his house. And to be able to feel that comes in the reading of the slowly, or the slow reading, because you have seen Rusty's interaction with the Amish, which he really, they're okay, but he doesn't like them. He doesn't like them buying up their land. But what happens in the middle space of that? If you're just reading quickly to find out, oh, they're going to get the house done or whatever, then it's not the same. Even with the car chase, the, you know, what's going on in the dynamic with Olivia and Wade in the car with her. The slow reading really brings you into the world versus into, say, I want to find out what's happening. I want a page turner. I just want to be entertained. And being entertained is great, too. And I'm not saying it's not.
But being entertained has different for everyone, you know? Like, I mean, I think, like, this is you being entertained.
Yes,
like,
it is.
And this is same with me. And when I'm looking at it and slowly and thinking about it in terms, I think mine is a little bit different from yours, where I am, you're looking to be, like, enmeshed in the world. And that's mm-hmm. for me during the first read. But in the second read, the slow read, I'm looking at it, I guess, like a scientist. I'm like a technician. Like, what is happening here that, like, cause that in me,
even and, with it like a horror book.
Yeah Well,
so you can separate that between being looking at the dynamics versus being caught up in I'm scared to death.
Well, I can give you an example. So I'm teaching a class on scary stories and why they matter, and we spent a long time in my class looking at the first paragraph of The Haunting of Hill House. Which is all about the house and this interesting point of view voice that is coming in describing the house. And I recommend anyone looking at that first paragraph and all the work that it does to just establish the tone and mood of the book and the description, just on the very like minute level of punctuation, she will have these little dependent clauses in the paragraph that feel like little daggers in the side, like
yeah.
like a Hill House not sane sits on the hill, you know, holding darkness within, you know. And it's like what am I reading here? It's this discombobulation that she's doing that I think really is fascinating, and that's fun for me, which I don't know, your mileage may vary, but like but yeah. So
who wants to recommend a book?
Yes. Oh, sure, I will write, but I do want to chime in just very quickly.
Good.
Is I do love this concept of slow reading, and because I've been thinking about this for my reading life this year, is, you know, in the past I'll have multiple books going, and this year I told myself I'm going to read one book at a time. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have one book going, and I'm going to truly immerse myself and take my time. And that's not something I've done in the past. So yes, now I will recommend a book. So let's talk about Grady Hendrix. So he's not a quick pick, but he is often a quick pick, but this one is not. But you should definitely put it on you need to get on the hold list. This one is called Witchcraft for Wayward Girls. Now, this is a horror novel. This is Grady Hendrix, so it's horror. And it is about a group of girls who are pregnant. They're unwed. They're teenagers. This is the early 1970s, and they are in a home for unwed mothers in St. Augustine, Florida. And we follow Neva, who for most of the book, we know her as Fern, because when you live in these homes, you give up your identity. So you take mm-hmm. on a different name. You don't speak about who you really are, like in your other life. You are there to have a baby, forget about it, and then go on with your life. So this story is about a group of girls staying in this manor house. The bookmobile comes, and they get their hands on a book that is called The Spell Book for Groovy Witches, and it's a real spell book. And so these girls do some witchcraft, and there's two avenues of horror in this novel, because the witchcraft is very dark. They do use it to get revenge on people. For example, one of the girls is told, you know, her morning sickness is just a figment of her imagination. And she says, I would like that doctor to know how this feels. And so they use the book. So that part is dark. There's childbirth. Grady Hendrix is a bit gory, and he goes there. But the true horror of this book is how these girls are treated by the doctors, by the hospital, by their families.
What time period is this?
This is the early 1970s.
Okay.
And he's really good at writing time periods, so it does feel like the 1970s. And like the girls are not told what's going to happen to them. They're all curious, okay, what happens when it's time to give birth? And they tell them, don't worry about it. They'll knock you out. It'll all be fine. It's not fine. They find that out very quickly. But Grady Hendrix keeps reminding us that they are children. And he takes care to remind us of that. So it's fascinating. This is my favorite book that I've read of his.
Oh, wow. I've read four of his books.
He's a horror writer.
He's a horror writer.
Okay. And he's really good at writing time periods. My Best Friend's Exorcism
yes.
takes place in the 1980s, and it reads like a mix of The Exorcist and The Babysitter's Club, and it takes
yes.
place in the 80s, and he's really good at evoking that period of neon and roller rinks. My favorite of his, though, and I haven't read that one, is The Southern Book Club's Guide to Slaying Vampires, and that one takes place in the 90s, and it's really, really about these group of older women who are noticing something that's happening in their community, and nobody is believing them because of who they are. And so they have to take matters into their own hands, and they disguise it as meeting for this like book club.
He writes women so well. Not a lot of men can, some men can pull it off really well, and he's one of them, but he prepares when he writes his books. So he read a book that was the standard in the 1960s of pregnancy books. And that book said, you know, morning sickness is a figment of everyone's imagination. So he was horrified by what he was
wow.
reading. And so he used that to incorporate in here. And he also had...
A man wrote that
a
book.
A man.
Yes, certainly.
And he had two members of his own family that were sent away two relatives of his. And so he was curious about that.
Wow.
That's a recommendation from Chris Hickey. Basically anything by Grady Hendrix, but Chris was talking about The Witchcraft for Wayward Girls.
Yes.
On this edition of All Sides Weekend Books, the book show, and Cassie Rose, talk to me.
I've got a book, another book that I absolutely loved, although it's kind of really, I don't like the title of the book. It's called Heaven and Hell. by an Icelandic author, Jan Kalman Stefansson. And it, first of all, I have to say it is beautifully, beautifully written, because Stefansson is also a poet. And so he combines the prose and poetry in just a fabulous way. And so the book opens with two young men. One is called The Boy, and his friend Bardur. They're leaving the village. They're carrying supplies back to the fishing hut where they work on a 6-man crew. And they haven't been out fishing for half a month, so they're saying tonight we'll probably go out. Among the supplies is a copy of Milton's Paradise Lost that Bardur has borrowed from an old sea wolf in the village who is blind and has a library of 400 books. And so they get back to the hut, and it's the usual evening, but then at 2 o'clock in the morning, they're woken up to get ready to go out and to fish. So they get the bait lines ready, they get the rigging ready, and they're preparing everything, and Bardur has to run back to the fishing hut. He just jumps up from the boat where the preparations are going on because he has to memorize more lines from Paradise Lost so he can recite them to himself and to the boy while they are slogging out there on the sea for 12 hours. Now, this is at the turn of the 20th century, and this book is narrated by what I can best say spirits that say in the very first page of the book, we are the rescue team. We are coming back here to bring to life for you the men who fished out on the sea off of Iceland. We're here to talk to you about the sea and the men and about life and death. And so here Bardur is, you know, memorizing Paradise Lost, comes back, gets in the boat, and they go out there. And there's just a plank of, it's just a boat of wood. And this is where the poetry comes in, because the author will just say, the boat is a plank of wood with oars. And he'll say that just off and on. The sea is surging. And so you get really what's going on with them as they're rowing for 4 hours out, then they're fishing. The problem is that Bardur, in his distraction about the poetry, is that he left behind his oilskin, what they call the waterproof. And so now the sea is raging and the snow is falling and the waves are coming on the boat. They've got to go back, and he's getting drenched. And I think I need to leave it at this, because there is this great tragedy that happens. But also it's a book of hope. It's a book of friendship. It's a book of, I think, hope triumphing. It is also a book of despair, but these spirits that narrate to us, they keep it above us being in despair because of the way that they talk about uncertainty, which is part of every life. And they go into the village, which is where the boy ends up. Again, I'm not going to give details. And therein where you meet the old sea wolves that are, you know, the guy that is drinking too much and should be out on his boat called the Hope, or the woman that takes in the boy, where you see this community of people. And it's not fake hope at all, because these are people who are like the guy who is drunk and should be off captaining his ship, or anyway, other characters. It's so well written and so beautifully written about the Icelandic weather, too.
Except the title, Heaven
Except
and Hell.
Except the title. I still don't get it.
Well, you had me at Paradise Lost.
Memorizing Paradise
read.
Lost.
I love Paradise Lost.
Yes. And so related to that, give us another recommendation,
okay,
Nick White.
Okay, so speaking about faith and uncertainty, I thought I would also recommend, keeping with my theme, Alice McDermott's book. I recommended it a couple years ago, but I want to bring it back to people's attention, called What About the Baby? Some Thoughts on the Art of Fiction. And again, this is a book that is both practical advice, but also soul advice. She has different chapters. These are actually, if I'm understanding, These are lectures that she gave at the Suwannee Writers Conference.
You knew her, didn't you?
Brought her down. We brought her to Ohio State maybe 4 years ago. She was a visiting writer, and she came and gave a reading and then offered a workshop for our students. I think it was around the time The Ninth Hour was out. Just a lovely woman. I love her work. I will read anything she ever writes. Child of My Heart is probably my favorite, if you've never read that one. But one of the things that she talks about that I was really quite moved with is her chapter on faith and literature. And of course, like her being Catholic and talking about Catholicism and how that informs her writing, she invoked Flannery O'Connor. And she talked really eloquently about this idea, which was the title of the book, The Ninth Hour, where her faith resides. And the ninth hour, as far as I understand it, is that moment when Christ is on the cross, when he has died, right, and before the resurrection, that moment of complete darkness and uncertainty and despair. And where do we go from here without the certainty of the resurrection, right? This person has died. And she said, you know, her faith cannot exist without doubt. And both are always sort of woven into every story that she writes, almost unconsciously. And I really related to that.
That's Alice McDermott, and you're quite right. I mean, anything that she writes is, for me, a page turner and really worth. And Child of My Heart was absolutely beautiful by Alice
McDermott.
Love
that book.
Yeah.
Love that book.
This is All Sides Weekend Books, the book show. We will be back in just a moment with our last break, and don't go away.
We could all use a little help navigating the news these days. The Consider This podcast wants to give you a hand. 6 days a week, we'll help you make sense of the day's biggest news story and what it means for you in less than 15 minutes. Listen now to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
We are back. All Sides Weekend Books. I'm Christopher Purdy with Nick White, with Cassie Rose, and with Chris Hickey. And Nick was talking earlier about the art of slow reading, and that's an art that some of us need to learn. I'm not there yet. And we're also talking about how sometimes we're reading 5 and 6 books at a time. And Chris Hickey, you set off, Mike, earlier, that it was making you anxious.
It was. So I was having, I had, maybe 4 going and was jumping between them and feeling, putting pressure on myself to finish them by a certain time. And so that's why I thought, I'm just going to read one at a time. And if I read less books this year, that's okay.
Yeah, I'm going now, particularly at my age, to the quality of my own reading, literally how I read the books rather than how many I read. And what brought me in mind to that when you were talking earlier was that, was it Cassie who recommended Ben Shattuck at our last show, the young writer whose book, The History of Sound, was a collection of stories, one of the best books I've read in the last 5 or 6 years, and I'm going to have to read it again because I was in the midst of 10 other books at the time, and I really want to savor that wonderful writer, Ben Shattuck. And his other book, which is his first, I believe, is called 6 Walks in the Footsteps of Henry David Thoreau. And as an old New Englander, I kind of gravitated to this. This is a nonfiction book, well worth reading slowly to savor it and to really get everything you can that the author's giving you. Ben Shattuck is this author's name. So that's my soapbox. We're all in our soapbox today, which makes for great radio.
What is in that book? What is it in the premise of the book?
He was reading. He lives near Cape Cod. That's where he grew up. Ben Shattuck did. And he was reading a book by Thoreau called Cape Cod, which was basically, it's a 500-page book he wrote in the 1840s when he walked from Concord on foot through Cape Cod, taking weeks in all weathers and camping out. And Ben was trying to recreate some of these walks literally from a map, from what he understood, the clues that were, and some of them now you walk through suburbia and you're surrounded by fast food joints. And some of it really wasn't working. But on the way, of course, you know, he meets the woman he's going to marry. He breaks up with somebody. He gets into some drug experiment. I mean, it's very, it's a life lived on your feet, trying to emulate what you read about and loved that happened 150 years earlier. If you want to, it's also a kind of a good sort of, it's too cold to go out, so stay in and put a blanket on you and read Six Walks in the Footsteps of Henry David Thoreau by Ben Shattuck, and don't miss his collection of stories. Thank you, Cassie Rose, because that came from you, called The History of Sound, and read them slowly. Now, give me another quick pick, Chrissy.
Okay, this is an exciting one. Lisa Genova, she is actually coming to Maine Library.
Yes.
On January 26th at 2 o'clock, you can get on our website and reserve a seat. It's a free event, but it's going to be fantastic. She is a PhD in neuroscience from Harvard. And so her books, her characters will have a neurological disorder of some kind. So her most famous book, Still Alice, was about early onset Alzheimer's. That became a film with Julianne Moore.
It's a devastating film.
Yes.
Beautiful film, yeah.
She writes these characters with so much care and empathy. This new book is called More or Less Maddie, and it is about bipolar disorder. So Maddie is a college student at NYU. And, you know, throughout her life, she's kind of floated along. You know, in high school, her boyfriend's friends were her friends. And he breaks up with her, and it's devastating. And so she's not really found her people at NYU. She's very lonely, and so decides to go on antidepressants. And that ends up triggering a manic episode. And it's such an intense episode. She thinks that Taylor Swift wants her to write her biography and believes this. So, and Taylor Swift does not want that. But she takes us through Maddie's manic episodes, her times in and out of the hospital, how her family reacts to this. And that's very interesting. The way she writes her mother, like the mother could be a somewhat villain of this story, but she's not, because there's a reason she reacts the way that she does. And the mother and her sister are very, perfectionism is a theme in the book, where they have, you know, they have a way that they want to look. And this, Maddie's bipolar disorder, you know, kind of throws a wrench into that and how it impacts. Maddie decides to become a comedian. And that is
as one does, yes.
Yes, and how she kind of comes in and out of that, and the family, you know, tries to keep her away from comedy because they think that triggers her episodes. This book is very hopeful. So we kind of go along with Maddie's experience, but it is told with hope, where her doctors keep telling her, it's going to be okay. We are going to get the right dose. Keep doing the work, and you are going to live a good and full life. But there are moments where it doesn't feel like that's going to happen. But it is just written with so much care and so much warmth. And I loved it. And I took my time with this one. And it really, if you don't know a lot about bipolar disorder, this will give you a very realistic experience of what that is.
Lisa Genova, and she's coming. You're bringing her to town.
She is coming to town. She will be at Maine Library on January 26th. She will be excellent to hear from.
Yeah. This is All Sides Weekend Books. We are talking about the hottest new reads, and some reads not so new, but really worth reading. Cassie Rose, what do you have for us?
I have a book of nonfiction, and it's called I Seek a Kind Person. It's by Julian Borger. The subtitle is My Father, Seven Children, and the Adverts That Help Them Escape the Holocaust. Julian Borger is a journalist with The Guardian. And what this book is about is the Viennese Jewish families who, after the Anschluss, when Hitler came in and invaded Austria, put advertisements in the Manchester Guardian in Britain. And for their children. This is not the Kinder Transport. So this is a slice of history that I wasn't aware of and found it very interesting. So this author, Borger, knew a little bit about his father, who it was, but not the details, that his father had been advertised and had gone, been raised by a family in Wales, but he didn't know the details. And his father took his own life in 1983 or so, and then later. And again, the family really didn't know much about his history, except the grandparents. And he decided as a journalist to go and look into it. So he found the advert, which is the book's title, I Seek a Kind Person, and which is looking for a family to foster his father to get him out of Austria. And
sorry.
God bless you. But he also decides that he wants to look into the children who have the adverts around that advert. So he looks into all of the stories of British families that brought these children over, what it was like for the families to, you know, drop their children off at the trains, the courage it took, the love for these children that they would send off to yeah. Britain. And there were many, many stories that were very, very, that took him in many different directions. One of them that where didn't go to Britain, but went to Shanghai. And there's, so he detours into the story about how the huge Viennese Jewish community there thrived before the Japanese came, and then what happened. He also talks about a young boy who did not, again, it was advertised, but he did not end up at Britain. He ended up in Holland, and then with his brother went on a whole journey that I won't go into. But it's very interesting how he writes about his own family, his grandparents, that knew Vienna before it, the fall of the Austrian-Hungarian Empire. So you get a little bit of that, what the grandparents were like when they were in England, because they ended up so coming back over. So his father came over, and then his grandparents came over too. It's very well written. It's very interesting. And it's just a slice of the Holocaust that I don't think is well known. And this is really interesting how he delved into this with these advertisements.
What a moving title, I Seek a Kind Person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Recommendation from Cassie Rose on today's All Sides Weekend, the book show. Cassie Rose is WOSU's book critic, and I do want to mention your blog, thelongestchapter.com, mm-hmm. which is always very important and very entertaining for anybody who loves to read, and Chris Hickey, who brings us the quick picks from the Columbus Metropolitan Library. You can find Chris at the Whetstone branch. Give her a tip, because she's fabulous. Nick White, who is a writer and professor of creative writing. What are you working on? Can you tell us? I ask you this every time you come on the show, what you're working on now.
On sentences.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you're reading them slowly. Good.
I'm reading them slowly to make sure they're just right.
Absolutely. What do you have for us to read?
So I thought I would bring a novel and talk about a novel. And this is a funny, hilarious novel that was published a few years ago entitled Dear Committee Members by Julie Schumacher. This is a novel set in academia in a very small Midwest university called Payne University, I believe. And it's a series of, in many ways, it's an epistolary novel, but not an epistolary means a novel made up of letters, but not the kind of letters you would think. These are recommendation letters that this creative writing professor is writing for his students, or emails that he's sending to people in the department. And there is more than a little bit of Jonathan Swift in this book, in the way of use of absurdity and irony to show kind of you know, the ways in which, like, people have to contort themselves and live their lives in academia. I thought I would just share the opening of this letter just briefly, because I find it really hilarious. And you get the voice of the writer who is writing these. His name is Jason Fitcher, and this is a fictional character created by Julie Schumacher. And he's a novelist who's having a hard time finishing his book because he is called upon for all these recommendation letters. And the beginning of it begins, "Dear Professor Quam, Alex Ruffel has prevailed upon me to support his teaching application to your department, which I gather is hiring adjunct faculty members exclusively, bypassing the tenure track with its attendant health benefits, job security, and salaries on which human beings might reasonably live. Perhaps your institution should cut to the chase and put its entire curriculum online, thereby sparing Ruffel the need to move to Lattimore, wherever that is. You could prop him up in a broom closet in his apartment, poke him with the butt end of a mop when you need him to cough up a lecture on Caribbean fiction or the passive voice, and then charge your students $1,000 each to correct the essays their classmates have downloaded from a website. Such is the future of education.
Well, I don't want you to tell tales out of school, wink, wink, Nick White, but academia, wow. I mean, why would anybody go into academia today?
Well, I think it probably is because a lot of us, at least the professors that I come in contact with at OSU, are really driven by the joy and the promise of teaching people and, like, showing them, like, sharing their love and their interests with their students and doing it in person and doing it with them in a classroom and creating these spaces where you don't tell your students anything, but you walk them through questions that have meant so much to you. You know, like one of the questions that we always sort of focus on in my workshops is what does it mean to live as an artist? And sometimes that means being in academia, but sometimes that means, you know, you have a 9-to-5 job and you create space in your life and you fight for space in your life to write and create art. And I think that's an important question. And this book is funny. This book is absurd. And I just love it. And if you've ever taught in the university or ever gone to college and wanted to know what a look at your professor's life was on the other side of the desk, this is a funny kind of like portrait of that.
Does what you just read to us ring true?
Definitely. It does. If you've ever read, I don't want to point to any specific articles, but if you've been keeping up with any essays that have been written in Higher Education Chronicle of Higher Education, excuse me, especially with the influx of AI in school and the use of that, the misuse of that in academic integrity, like that feels very true to life.
That's a recommendation from Nick White. It's called Dear Committee Member by Julie Schumacher on All Sides Weekend Books. We have time for one more from each of you. Chris Hickey.
Okay, so this is Death of the Author by Nnedie Okorafor. And she is known for writing African futurism. So she's a science fiction writer, which is basically, so African futurism, science fiction, but with an African experience. So there's the culture is in there, maybe the setting is there. So she wrote the Akata Witch series and the Binti series. And Akata Witch has been compared to Harry Potter, but in Africa. And I mean, her books are fantastically written. This is a little bit of a departure for her because it is more of a literary novel. But if you like her science fiction, you should still read this one because there is a book within a book. So you will get her science fiction writing along with the literary writing. So it's about a woman named Zelu, and she's a Nigerian-American author. She hasn't had a great career, so she decides to write a book just for herself. And it's a science fiction. It takes place in space. There's artificial intelligence. And that becomes a bestseller. And so it's about when she becomes famous and then she kind of loses control over her narrative. So Zelu is kind of seen as a failure by her family. You know, her siblings are very high performing. If you like Nnedie Okorafor, read this. If you've never read her, this is a good place to start because you will get two different kind of feelings of writing from her.
From Chris Hickey, Cassie Rhodes, in the last 30 seconds, give us a...
Elena Knows by Claudia Pinero. It's a wonderful story about a woman who believes that her daughter did not commit suicide and she's alone proving it. And this woman, who is Elena, the mother, has severe Parkinson's. So she spends the day going to find someone. And it is, I don't know how to describe it, but severe Parkinson's in that, like, she can't lift her head above her, she can't, above her shoulders, and she needs medicine for her feet to work. And it, the way that it's written about how she's traveling on the subway, getting in a taxi, going to this person's house because she needs a person, a body, who can help her do the investigation. It's it's a compelling book because of the way that you also, it goes back and forth with what happened to the daughter. And then when she gets and she's knocking on the door of the friend that owes her a debt, then it starts to pick up and you begin to find out what happened.
That is all the time we have for today for All Sides Weekend Books. I wish we had three more hours because we could fill them. I'm Christopher Purdy. Cassie Rose, thank you. WOSU's book critic, thelongestchapter.com. Chris Hickey from the Columbus Library, thank you for Quick Picks. Nick White, thank you very much for teaching us how to read and to write. Thank you very much for all of that. Thank you, Chris Johnson, for making us radio. Thank you all for listening. I'm Christopher Purdy for All Sides Weekend on 89.7 NPR News. Thank you for joining us.